Hello there, everybody, and welcome to the latest Q&A as part of the Rainmaker Site Building Roadmap. I'm Jared Morris. I will be your host on today's Q&A. I'm joined by Chris Garrett. You all submitted some wonderful questions. We really appreciate it, as we always do. And as usual, we gave the questions priority that were submitted the earliest, so that's how we will run down these. And let's get going. If we have any time at the end to take some additional questions, we will. But let's start rolling through the questions that were submitted ahead of time. So we will start with Atif's question. So Atif says, "Hello, I would like the homepage of my website to be a landing slash about page with an opt-in form. And the primary navigation is a blog tab, which takes you to the blog. This is where I would like to have a primary navigation bar too. Is this possible? Usually you see the latest posts. Sometimes out of hundreds of posts, it would be good for my readers to see the categories and even a sidebar with popular latest posts." Well, Atif, you absolutely start us out with the bang, or with a bang, because I prepared more slides for this question in particular than any other. But I really like the question because it allows us to go through some really important steps that people may not use all of these in your Rainmaker site, but I think this can be really helpful for everybody as you start figuring out how to organize your blog on your site. So let's roll through this and we'll go step by step. So the first step is making your site homepage your about page. So I probably shouldn't use the word blog there in the slide, but it's making your website's homepage your about page. And so let's talk about how to do that. So the first thing that you want to do is you want to go to the appearance editor. Okay, that's within the design settings. And when you go to the appearance editor, you want to open up the home and posts display option, as indicated here. Once you do that, and we've covered this in a previous session, you want to choose a static page instead of your latest post, choose a static page, and then for the front page, pick the page. And you can choose from regular pages or landing pages here. They'll all be listed. So Atif said that he wanted the about page, so we're going to click about. Now, here's an important note. If you make this change, okay, and you do not see it reflected on your live site, like you click about, you save it, and then you go to your home page and you're like, wait a minute, it still looks like the same regular page. Remove all the existing widgets from the content areas, and you do that in design content areas, even the default widgets, because sometimes when those are still in there, they will keep your home page looking the same as it was, but once you remove those, then this change will take place here for the static page. So I just wanted to make sure that you know that so you don't get in and do this step and it doesn't work exactly how you think that it should. All right, so that's step one. Step two is to add an opt-in form to the about page because, as Atif said, he wants an opt-in form right there on the about page, which is going to be his site's homepage. So to do this, you want to go to the content menu and choose forms. And then go in and you want to create an opt-in form, or if you already have an opt-in form, then you want to copy the short code for the form. So this section right here, you want to copy that, and then you want to go to your about page, edit the about page, and paste in the form ID right here, just as I have done right here. So by pasting in this form ID, that form will now show up on the page as an alternate method. Down in the sidebar of the post edit page, down here on the sidebar, you'll see an option for appending a form to the page, and so you can choose it that way as well. Doing it this way allows you to put it within content if you want it to be, in the middle of your content. This will add it to the end of the content. So that is step two. Step three then is to edit the primary navigation bar because remember he said that he wanted blog to be in the primary navigation bar, a link to the blog. So go to your design settings and click menus. When you go to menus, make sure that you have your primary menu selected, okay, so that you can make sure that you're editing that one. And then you'll see your menu structure right here. And so these are all the pages that your menu is linking to. So home, the blog page, library, contact. You can remove these and make it just the blog page. You can add different pages or links to different areas of your site, pages. You can create custom links, link to categories. All of the options are right here, okay? This is where you set that up. And make changes to your different menus. And then you just want to make sure that you click Save right here if you do make any changes to it. Step four then is to edit the secondary navigation bar. Because as Atif said, he then, when you click on blog, he wants another navigation bar that would have the categories. So we're going to click on secondary menu. All right, so we have back in our menus page, we open up the secondary menu, and then he wants to make sure that the categories are there. So on this test site, I only have a couple of categories, uncategorized and basics. You may have 4 or 10 or however many categories that you have. So you want to put check marks by those categories, click Add to Menu, and then you see how they were added here beneath the items that were already there. So in this screenshot, they're not there. You hit Add Menu, and they're there. All right, so if all you want then is just these two items, you just want the categories, you can just go in here and remove all these other items from the menu. So just click the little triangle to open it up, click Remove, and that will get it out of there, and you will be left with just your categories or whatever else you want in your menu. Again, click Save. Now your menu is ready for use. Step 5 is then to create a dynamic sidebar, because he said he wants a special sidebar on that blog page so that he can display some different content. So go in to Dynamic Sidebars, which is in your design settings. And since this is on his blog, I just named this sidebar Blog Sidebar with an ID of blog. Click Add New Sidebar. And then to actually go add content areas to this sidebar, click on Content Areas in your design settings. And then go find your dynamic sidebar over here. It's usually over here in the right-hand column underneath the default content areas for that theme. You want to open it up, and since he wants that secondary menu on that blog page, I'm actually adding it to the sidebar. So you're going to drag custom menu over here, and then you can choose secondary menu, and then click Save. And this will ensure that it pops up in the sidebar. And then he wanted to add some other items. So he can add his recent posts here. He can pull in his social icons if you want. You can choose from any of the available widgets or the text widget and put it there in the sidebar. And then the next step, and I think this is the final step, is to add the dynamic sidebar to the blog page. Okay, so to do this, he's going to go into his blog page, click Edit, and then he is going to go down to Sidebar Selection and click the Blog Sidebar. So instead of there just being the option for the default sidebar, now he can choose from this dynamic sidebar that he just created. So he's going to click Blog, and then when he opens up his blog page, that is going to now have, he's got the primary navigation bar up here, his secondary navigation bar is here in the sidebar, he's also got his recent posts, he's got his social icons, and if you scroll down on this page, you'll see the other blog posts. This isn't an individual blog page, this is a rundown of all the different posts that he has, and his homepage is the About page, and that, I believe, answers that question and walks you through all the steps that you wanted, Atif.
Well,
Chris,
done.
Any thoughts there?
That was quite an epic answer. I just wanted to underline the reason why you would remove all your widgets from your homepage if you wanted to do this. Some of the themes actually have a homepage template, and they think if you've got anything in those content areas that you want to have their template as the homepage, and you have to clear them out if you want to switch to use a different page, because otherwise it'll say, nope, you've got some content there, I'm going to show that content. So that's why you have to clear those out.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, so let's move on now to question number 2 from Steve. So Steve asks, what is the best practice for including PDF documents in blog posts? I have an insurance agency and I'm thinking of posting insurance quotes once personal information is removed to give visitors an idea of actual prices customers are paying for insurance. So Chris, I'll show you how I set this up, and if you have a different way or maybe some variations on this way, let me know. But I think that the best way is to utilize the Download Manager. And the Download Manager is part of the conversion tools inside of your Rainmaker platform site. So click on Conversion and then click on Download Manager to go to your Download Manager. And the next step then is to upload your PDF, Steve. And so you would do this for each of the PDFs that you have. So up here, the first little field, you want to give it a descriptive name. And I'll show you why giving it a descriptive name is important. Like, I wouldn't just do PDF1 here, all right, unless that is as specific as you can get. But I'll show you why here in just a minute. So give it a descriptive name. And then you also want to choose the member group that will be required. Now, this is if applicable. So if you're going to put these PDFs just out on like a normal blog page and you just want anybody to be able to download them, then you wouldn't necessarily need a member group. But let's say that you were putting these in a content library that's behind a membership wall, either free or paid. Well, now you're going to want to make sure that you have a member group so that people have to be part of that member group to get the PDF. Okay, the next step then is to actually upload the file. So just click Choose File, locate the file on your computer and upload it. And then you have some other settings here if you need them. So you can decide whether the file is publicly accessible. You can decide whether you want to track downloads of the file, whether you want to include it in your member download shortcode. If you want additional insight on those, I would direct you to the knowledge base. For that, you can also delay access on it if you want to. Just depending on your context and your goals, that will determine whether or not you're going to use any of those settings. And then click Save. So once you've chosen to upload the file here, then you're going to click Save. Okay, it hasn't actually uploaded yet until you click Save. And then when you click Save, you'll see that a link shows up here, and you'll know the upload was successful when you see the file name here in what was the previously blank field. Okay, so you can see I actually uploaded the slides for this very presentation, and so I can see it right there in the file, and then this is the link that I would use. So I can actually take this link and I can copy this URL to create a link on any page on my site, just like I would create any other link. And so I'll show you here how you would then insert this onto any page on the site. So I can either copy and paste that link, or I can actually use here from the editor, I can click Insert Download. And so when I click Insert Download, and then I start typing in the name of the download, it will pull up everything that is relevant there. So let's say, Steve, that you have, 10 of these PDFs, and for each one you title it PDF colon and then a descriptive name. Well, just by typing in PDF, which is, very general, very easy to remember because that's the type of file that it is, it'll pull up all the ones that are named PDF, and then you'll see your descriptive title and you'll be able to remember, oh yeah, it's the one from November of 2015. That's the one that I want to do, whatever it is. And so you just click on that, and then you'll see it come up here. Then you want to provide the link text. So this will be the anchor text that people actually click on when they're reading your content and they're going to click to download the PDF. So you can do the name, you can do click here, grab the PDF, whatever it might be, and then click Insert Download. And so you insert the download and you have a clickable link to your PDF, and you can actually turn this clickable link into a button really easily by toggling over to the text editor. So you notice how here I was on the visual editor, and then if I click text, I toggle over to the text editor, I add class equals button, and now instead of it just being a clickable link, which right here it was just a clickable link, now it is actually a button that people can click on. So I can add a little bit of text before, I can add a little bit of text after, and now it's a clickable link that just, looks nicer and is probably going to draw the eye more and draw more clicks. One quick note here, if you're creating an LMS item, so this, what I just showed you will work for posts and pages and podcast episode pages. If you are creating an LMS item, then there is actually an entire widget here for multimedia. And so what you want to do is find the Add Download Link button, and you can insert your download, and it's the same way. You just search for it, put your name in, your descriptive title in, search for it, find it, click on it, and then it'll all be right there, and the LMS actually manages it and organizes your downloads and your multimedia for you. So Chris, that's how I would do it. Is there any better way or any additional insight that you would add for providing PDFs?
First Nicholas asks, can you repeat what the button?
Yeah, sure. So to create a button, so, and this arrow covers it up, but what you don't see here is the open bracket and the A, which is the HTML code for creating a link. You can see the closing A tag here. So you've got an open bracket and an A here, then a space, and then class equals button in quotation marks with another space. And that will add that class to the button, and that is what changes it from clickable link to clickable button. And all Rainmaker themes have that built in, so you can add that class and it will create the button for you. You can do that on any link on any page.
Yep. So one of the things that I like to do if I want to be really fancy is the modal elements tool. And I think that is still in labs, right? I'm not sure. Yeah, that allows you to do like a pop-up. And one of them is inline and one of them is iframe. Yeah, and Brian confirms it's in labs. So that's like having a little, what they're called, like a lightbox window pop-up that comes up. So that's a nice way of doing it. And then iframe means that you can embed the document in your page, so there's a little like scroll bar and you can scroll up and down. So that's a nice thing. Because they're not they're not ebooks, they're quotes. It's not quite as relevant, but for everybody who's thinking, I want to embed a PDF, there are services like, is it Scribd or Scribd? There are services out there that are kind of like a YouTube or a Vimeo,
Oh, yeah.
but for PDFs. So that's another option as well. They'll give you like embed code and stuff. I've not used them myself, but it's just something that's out there. So yeah, I think what you said, Jared, that really covers it.
Well, and the other thing too, and I didn't want to get too in the weeds here with the tutorial, but the other thing that you could do also, and this goes back to, if you have a membership, like let's say that you have a free membership and you're only going to offer the PDFs, these examples, to people who have a free membership. Well, you could actually use your show to short codes. And so if you're not familiar with those, again, I would go to the knowledge base and just look up, short codes and find the show to and the hide from short codes. Because you could put that link in between a show to member access free code, and that way the only people who will see it are the people who are logged in and have that access. So that's a great way to restrict access, but at the same time encourage people to sign up for the free membership. Because like, hey, here's a PDF. Like these are actual examples that you can see that will help you. The only thing that you have to do is you have to, join the site and it's free, or it's paid, whatever. But those short codes will allow you, on any other page, it can be visible. The page itself can be visible by someone without having to log in. But then you've got this extra section where it's like, hey, now, only the people who are logged in can get it. So it creates a little bit of scarcity and can be a nice way to drive registrations depending on your context and your content.
And even if you're not using registrations, you might still want to use the download manager because you can make the downloads available to the public, but it still counts. It still shows how many people have downloaded it. So you can see if the PDF has been popular.
Yep, I would definitely use the download manager for your downloads either way. It's nice to use it. Okay, Chris, we had several questions for you actually, based on the Maker Hacks examples that we had from our last webinar.
There's a
And by the
lot.
way, if you're viewing this Q&A and you haven't yet viewed the webinar that we did last week about setting up your blog, I highly recommend that as well to go along with this. But here's one of those questions, Chris. What type of disclaimer does Chris use for his affiliate links? And you were nice enough to actually just send us the disclaimer so that we can paste it right here. Do you want to talk us through this?
This is the polite one. I do use more snarky affiliate links sometimes, or more sarcastic ones because that's my humor. But this is a little bit more professional. So what I'm saying here is, even though it's not going to cost you any extra and it's not swayed my opinion of the product in any way, I do use affiliate links. So if you do buy after clicking my link, then I might get some commission. And the reason why I phrase it that way is because not everybody knows what an affiliate link is. And if somebody hears the phrase sales commission, they think, oh, well, you've been influenced to recommend that. So if you go to an electronics store, a big box store, and you know that their sales floor staff get a sales commission and they recommend a certain television, what enters your head? You think, are they recommending this because it's the truth, or are they recommending it because they get 15% sales commission instead of 5%? And you'll never know. So that's my approach. And it's variations on a theme. So you're not going to pay any extra. I can continue doing what I do because this is how I get paid. And this is the comedy-free version. But I like Chris Brogan's version of it where he says, I might get a pony, or I
Yeah.
might get enough to buy a pony, or you can say, I might get enough to buy a coffee as a, or a, it's like a tip jar. Now, what I would not do is intentionally go without a disclaimer because of the law. And I am fortunate that I live in Canada where the official policy is not as aggressive as in the United States, probably because they don't have the budget. Is it the FTC or FCC? I can't remember. The USA equivalent, anyway, is probably better funded than in Canada, so they hunt people down more. But it's the right thing to do to have that disclaimer. I have probably missed it at least half the time because I'm in a rush. You shouldn't miss it. You should have a disclaimer. And while most people will put it in their about page or even the footer. I think, strictly speaking, it's got to be close to the link or close to the recommendation to be officially cure. That said, are they going to hunt you down if you're only making a few dollars? Probably not. They're going after the big folks, and really the ones that they're most aggressively going after are people who have referred a great deal in terms of people, great deal in terms of money, or something like a pyramid scheme or anything like that. But that doesn't mean that you're going to escape. It doesn't mean somebody's not going to, you know, tell somebody about you and get you into trouble. So best to err on the side of caution, and it's the polite thing to do, tell people it's an affiliate link.
Yeah, no, there's absolutely no reason to hide behind these. And actually, I can show you an example that I use over on the assembly call for posts that we have where we, you know, sell things with affiliate links. And I like to put it in there, you know, hey, if you click and purchase any item, we get a commission. The revenue we generate makes a big difference in helping us cover the cost of hosting our show and maintaining the site. So thank you. And I kind of like to pitch it as this is actually a great way to help us and let them know exactly where this revenue is going to go. And I actually then include at the bottom of those some other affiliate links. You know, if you're going to be shopping at some of these places, click here and use that link. Now, you have to be careful with that, because that can, you know, like Amazon's terms of service, they might actually frown upon this, although I've actually had someone from Amazon reach out to me before and tell me that, you know, the way that I was explaining it wasn't right, and so no one has said anything to me about the way that this is explained. But I like to just put it, and I actually have this in my, I have a blog post template for certain post types that I do over and over again with the text expander, and this is just in each one. So when I open that up and do my text expander, it's all just right there, and I don't have to type it out every time. So it makes it nice and easy.
And what they don't like is you incentivizing an affiliate link click. So you can't say, get an ebook if you buy through my link, my affiliate link. You're not supposed to do that, but people still do. A lot of YouTube channels will say, please buy through my links. And that's all they say, just please buy through my links. That's skirting on the edge of getting into trouble with them. But all they would do is either chastise you or they would kick you out of their affiliate scheme. I don't think we're in that sort of, you know, we're not in the Darren Rouse league where, you know, he's probably making six figures from affiliates alone.
Yeah. Well, who is in the Darren Rouse league?
Exactly.
Okay, moving on to question four. So this is a big question from Lori here. And Lori, I hope I answered this correct. But basically, you are going to create a hyperlocal podcast network, which is really exciting, and you're using Rainmaker to do it, and you would like to incubate hyperlocal podcasts that can be spun into their own sites. And your question concerns the ability to host these podcasts as related but separate content using categories. Can you use both a site URL and a podcast-specific redirect? You're pretty sure the answer is yes, but your other questions follow from this premise. So yes, and I'll show you how to do that. And then you want to know, do you attach the redirected URL to the archive page for the podcast category? Will the redirect apply to both the parent category and any children associated with it? And then when you set the social media sharing options, are they only set for the parent site, or can you set them differently for each parent category? Do you need both a blog and a podcast feed, or can they be combined? So what's great about this question, Lori, is actually on my site, Assembly Call, we have four or five different shows, a few of which I'm planning on spinning off into their own sites this off-season. So I've been thinking about this very topic. So let me just walk you through how we have them set up on our site. And I think this is going to answer most of your questions. But if you do have follow-ups, that may be something that either we can help you out with here, or support can maybe help you out with some of the super specifics. But you know, the first step that you want to do if you're going to be creating these different podcasts is obviously to create a new podcast series. Okay, you're not going to want to do all of this from one main podcast feed. You're going to need to create individual podcast series. And so you do that via the content menu, click on Podcast Network, and then you want to go in and add a new podcast series. So you can see here all the different series that we already had. So you would just type the name and type the slug in here, and if it is the parent of another show, put that right there. The example I'm going to use is our show called Bracketology.fm, which got really popular this year, so we're going to spin it off into its own site in the off-season. But you know, essentially, I tried to treat this show like it was its own thing. I mean, it's on Assembly Call, but we tried when people went to the URL, we wanted them to feel like they were actually, you know, almost on a little bit of a separate site that was really just dedicated to this show. And so when you go in and edit your podcast series, obviously you've got your name, you've got your slug that you want to make sure this is what's going to be in the URL. So you probably want it to be as short and descriptive as it can be. So for us, for this one, it's pretty easy, just bracketology. And then down here in on the podcast settings page where it says series feed, the category page for your series will actually be this URL minus the feed part. So just assemblycall.com/series/bracketology. That's how I would actually go see that podcast series page, which I'll show you here in just a second. And then you can actually choose individual sidebars for your podcast series page. So I created a dynamic sidebar for this particular podcast series, and you can create as many dynamic sidebars as you want for each individual series. And you would want to do that, so that way you can have individual, you know, social icons and that kind of thing. And you can do that really simply with the sidebar, and then just assign that sidebar to the category page and to the episode pages to give it a nice uniform look. Now, continuing to scroll down, we're still on the podcast settings page here. And so you can see I really went to town with the archive intro text. So I've got my archive headline, which is a little bit different from just the podcast episode name because I didn't want to clutter it up with Andy's name. But on the archive headline, I do want it there because his name, you know, has some meaning. People know who he is. So I want that built-in credibility. And then again, really went to town here. So I set up the archive page so that it would include an external player that includes every episode. So on this show, I actually use Spreaker, which is a service I like. In addition to what Rainmaker already does for podcasts, I have a few specific needs that I wanted Spreaker for, and so I use the individual player for that show on this page. And then I also put the show-specific social links. So you can see the links here, they are all specific to bracketology.fm, not the Assembly Call. And this is important because Rainmaker social settings are site-wide. So like when I go in and do the social settings and for Twitter, it's going to be at Assembly Call if someone tweets something using those buttons. So for these individual shows, I just went in and did it myself and just copied this table, and it's very easy. I put it on here, and then it's, you know, it's going to be on the page. I don't have to, you know, repaste it again or anything like that. Okay, so then now this is what the page looks like. So if you go to the actual series page, you can see the headline here. You can see the intro description. I've got the player right there. This is then continuing to scroll down the page. I know that's a little bit awkward. But if you go to bracketology.fm, if you just put that URL in, you can see what this page looks like live on the site. But I'm just showing you this so you can see here are the icons. And then as you start scrolling down, you get all the rundown of the episodes one by one by one, as you would normally see on an episode page. Now, let's deal with this question right here. So how is it set up so that you can go to bracketology.fm and it takes you to this kind of deeper page into the site? Well, that's a redirect. So you want to buy your domain. In this case, I bought bracketology.fm and have DNS, and this is not done at Rainmaker. So this would be done at GoDaddy or, you know, Namecheap or, you know, any other domain registrar that you would want to use. You can buy your domain. And then within your DNS settings, you can set up what's called a domain forward. And when you do this, then you forward this domain to your series page. So I have that set up. So now when people go to bracketology.fm, it takes them right here to the series page. So I hope that that answers all of those questions. And again, you know, go check out, go to bracketology.fm, Lori, and look at that, and then click on individual episodes, and you'll see how, you know, the sidebar is very specific just to that show. And then, like I said, in the off season, we're actually going to spin that off into its own site. So export that content, put it onto its own site. But for now, you know, I wanted to give it as much of a unique feel as I could with its own social icons, you know, with its own logo there, with its own URL, all of that. So hopefully, looking at that example will help you see how you can do this for your shows as well, because I think the setup would be fairly similar. And Lori says exactly what she wanted to know. Perfect. Okay, good. Glad that we answered that, Lori. Good luck. Keep us posted on how that is going. Chris, is there anything else that you would add to that?
Absolutely not. You're the expert on this stuff. I was learning while he was doing it.
I tell you, the podcast network feature in Rainmaker is really, really versatile. And if you are thinking about hosting multiple shows, just the setup and the way that you do it, once you do it once, it's fairly simple, and it's really versatile enough to handle a lot of different shows. So it's really nice. Okay, so let's move on now to Susanna's question. So Susanna has digital and physical products that she would like to offer, but she does not know the best way to set up an online store or storefront. She knows there are limitations to the Rainmaker platform when it comes to this, but would love to be able to keep everything connected on her site. Would you suggest setting up a store and storefront within Rainmaker? And if so, how can she set up a professional-looking storefront, or would you use a third party like Shopify? And Susanna says, thank you so much for these webinars. They're extremely helpful and encouraging. That is awesome. That's exactly why we do them, Susanna. So let me give you the real short answer here, and then we'll see if we can expound a little bit. You know, the best thing for these questions is we always refer people to support, and they can then refer you to services, because this may be something that you really want some help setting up to do it properly. Chris, do you have any additional insight that we can give to Susanna that might get her on the right track for this? Because obviously, Rainmaker is designed for digital products, but we want to be as helpful as we can.
Yeah, for physical products, we do have an integration that is ready to test with Equid. I think that's how you pronounce it, and I'm sharing it in the links in the chat. That is a tool that is kind of like Shopify, but it allows you to have a single sign-on. So people register for your Rainmaker site and they can log into the store and vice versa, and that's really important. As I say, it's in testing, and you would do ticket to support who would refer you to services, and then Daisy would be able to help you with that in services. And Amelia says Gumroad is used quite a lot as well. We're really set up for digital products, though, as Jared says, and essentially what you're getting with physical products is a lot of things that we just, there's things like shipping and stock and, you know, sizes and things. It's a very complex area, so it's something we'd rather partner or integrate than build ourselves. You know, we've got enough to build.
Yes. Cool. So good luck with that, Suzanne. If you have any follow-up questions, certainly let us know in future sessions. Let's go to Peter and Chris. Peter has another question about, really it's kind of a general question, but he's using Maker Hacks as an example. So in the last session, you spoke about important pages to have, about, subscribe, resources, services. So taking Maker Hacks as an example, it does not have the subscribe link as a top menu option, whereas the others do appear there. So is it just an invisible or unattached page linked to from, say, blog posts, guest posts, or, you know, interview, or someplace that, you know, when people say, hey, how can we get more, that you would link them to in interview questions? Do you consciously decide not to put the subscribe page on a menu, or is it just a lack of space thing? What is the thought process there for you on Maker Hacks specifically and generally?
Yeah, so he's right. The question is a good one, because I do not link to it directly from my navigation. And I actually intentionally did that because I have so many opt-in forms, so many places. I actually have a subscribe page on chrisg.com that I don't link from the navigation also. And it's mainly linked from social media, as the question says, you know, social media, interviews, you know, read it out on a podcast or maybe in a webinar, link to it from guest posts. It's not necessary to be in the navigation because every page on my site is a landing page, as we always, you know, repeat over and over again. So that's why it's not linked. It's not necessary because there are so many opportunities to opt in already. Now, that is not to say it's a bad idea to do that. Your subscribe page is a lot more real estate to really sell people on subscribing. And the other thing that you might want to do is split test that subscribe page and really, you know, do the best you can to optimize it. But right now, on none of my sites, I believe I go for the opt-in box that's obvious instead of linking to the subscribe page at all times.
Yeah, and I, you know, I'll contrast what you're saying. Let me bring up Assembly Call, because I do actually have my the subscribe page linked here, and I actually have it set up so that if you scroll over subscribe, you know, because there's so many different ways you can actually subscribe to our show in different ways, because you can do it on YouTube, iTunes. If you click here, it's going to take you to like to the email subscription page, or actually maybe I don't even have that. What I did is I took that link away because people were getting kind of confused, like, okay, well, what am I subscribing to the podcast, to email? So I wanted to specify which way you're subscribing. Is this RSS? Is this email? Is this a show? So it's something that you may want to think about if there are different ways to subscribe based on how you have your content. And yet I also wrestle back and forth with, I could just remove all of this, have a less cluttered navigation bar, and, you know, do more with pop-ups and with, you know, forms inside the content. It's a tough one. I go back and forth on it a little bit. I think it's helped us have these up here, but I also haven't split test it yet. And Chris, I'm glad you provided that answer, because I may actually end up doing that. Yeah. Just seeing what works better.
And it's worth considering that Assembly Call is very much a media experience, whereas MakerHacks is more of an article-based right now, because I'm afraid of media.
Well, and that's why context is so important. You know, and what's the right answer for one person may be the wrong answer for others. So, you know, so just to give you both of those different perspectives on it. Okay, so let's go now to Roger's question. So Roger is currently working on his Rainmaker site using the Minimum Pro theme and will eventually migrate his existing site over. He has a couple of questions regarding navigation. So on his existing site, which has a typical blog-type homepage, he has navigation below the header that relates to his categories. So 7 navigation tabs show, and within those are 10 more as drop-downs. He does intend to reduce, consolidate the number of categories. He knows that Chris recommends having 5 to 7. His question is that he sees quite a few blogs today that don't have navigation like this. He presumes they rely on people using the categories and tags listed at the end of each post. If so, should he adopt this style? And then if he doesn't have navigation tabs for categories, does a search box then become the main way people find topical articles? Because he's not a fan of tag clouds. I'm not either, so I agree with you there. And then the second part of that question is, one of the navigation links he'd like to have at the top, in the header area would be for his cornerstone content, of which there will be 4 main topics, each having its own landing page. Could that be the resources tab, and would that tab then have a drop down for the 4 topics? So let's hold the thought on question number 1, Chris, and let's get to that. But I do want to show a real quick tutorial of how you do what Roger is suggesting in number 2, and it's what I did, the example that I just showed you on Assembly Call, how you get that drop-down menu. I just want to go over that real quick so that we're clear on the how-to there. But to edit your menus to do that, go to your design settings, click on menus, and then, so you, when you go in here, you can actually create a custom link if you want to. That's something that I didn't show you earlier. You know, I showed you pages and how you can do the category links. But you can also create a custom link. Now, your resources page may already be a page with the name resources, you know, but if you want to make that something different, or even if it's an external link, whatever it is, you can create a custom link here. And so once you put that link in your menu structure, then what you want to do is any additional links that you want to have. And so in this example, he said he was going to put his categories in there. Well, categories are one of the main options here, so you can just open up categories. You can put a check mark on all the categories that you want to be in your menu structure, select them all, select a part of them, but once you put check marks there, click add to menu, and then you will see them all come up in a line, right? But do you notice how they're all aligned vertically? Well, if they're all aligned vertically, then you're going to see all of these in your navigation menu, and you're going to get a pretty clogged up navigation menu, and you don't want all of your categories there, right? You want them under the resources tab. So what you want to do is just click and drag. It's really simple. You click and drag the item that you want to be, that you want in the submenu beneath the intended parent item. So I'm just going to grab uncategorized and just drag it here to the right of resources, and I'm going to do the same thing with basics and just drag it right there to the right. And so once I have them both aligned under here, you can visually see the structure. Then I'm going to go click on save menu, and then when I go out to my navigation bar, when I roll over resources, now the submenu is going to come up, and then these are clickable links that I can click on and go to. So that would be, you know, like my categories or whatever it would be, like I showed you before with subscribe, you know, all the different subscribe options that are under there. So I just wanted to show you that because that's the how-to there. If you've never created a submenu before, it's very, very simple. But Chris, what do you think, I mean, in terms of the general question about, you know, having a navigation, maybe even a secondary navigation, you know, that has categories, tags, is that a good way to do it? Is that too much, too cluttered? What do you think?
I think it comes down to you, your audience, that your site. I agree tag clouds are not the optimal way of working it, because tag clouds, people don't really understand, and it's kind of overwhelming. It's like that paradox of choice. But I think you have to work with what kind of publication you're doing, what kind of website you're doing, because some sites people definitely want to navigate via category. Other sites, they just want the latest, and it's more important that they see your latest articles or related posts. So that's kind of like the choice you're making there. It's all down to what is most important for your audience and what's most important for what your people want to find or what they're looking for next, if that
And
makes sense.
Roger did make the distinction in rereading this, of course, he's right. He wants to link to landing pages, not necessarily category pages. And so the process there would still be the same. So landing pages, Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, but landing pages will be here in pages, right? Is that
Yes.
correct? Okay. So they will be there. And again, if you want to link to some page and you look in pages, you look in post categories, and it's not there, you can create a custom link so you can link anywhere. And that custom link can be, a parent link in your menu structure. It can be a child link in your menu structure, in terms of, in one of the submenus. Either way, so you have great, great flexibility there, no matter what pages that you want to link to. Perfect. So hopefully that answered that question. And
Amelia says you need to use the screen options to show the tab for landing pages.
oh, I don't have that on this page, but screen options would be up here. In the top of the navigation, right, Chris? I do believe. Okay.
Yes.
So, yeah, so then you'd be able to find, then landing pages would pop up right here. Okay, so Dan's question is next. So Dan says, at some point, will you explain some of the more advanced blog post features, content optimizer, link building, and SEO settings? The answer there is yes, absolutely. In fact, we have an SEO webinar and a Q&A planned for April. So right now it's March, we're doing kind of the basics of using Rainmaker as a blog. Next month, that will be one of the topics that we tackle. And I'm actually getting ready to write a post on Copyblogger about it, about SEO and some of the ways that the Rainmaker tools fit into what you want to do for SEO. So that'll be up on Copyblogger soon, and then we will have webinars and Q&As about that topic next month. So
Yeah,
that is
and it's
coming,
really
Dan.
good timing. Google just put out an update that's caused lots of gnashing of teeth and anxiety with a lot of blogs out there, so it's a good time to have this.
Are they going back to looking at just keyword density?
No.
2.5%? No.
No, but they have nuked a lot of sites that were heavily monetizing, so yeah, it's
Hey,
caused some.
if it helps better content rise to the top, I'm in favor. And by the way, for more on SEO, this is SEO month on Copyblogger. So if you go there, Brian's written some articles, Sonia wrote a great article, lots of articles this month about SEO, how to think about it just in a big picture perspective, from a strategic perspective, and also some of the nuts and bolts of things you can do. So good timing on that question because there's a lot going on. The next question comes from Dwayne. And Dwayne says, as I begin to develop a content strategy, I'm not quite clear on the difference between category pages and cornerstone content pages. Are they the same? Could you show us a comparison or example of the two and how they work together or overlap? So let me show you a couple of examples here, Chris, and then we can kind of talk this through a little bit. So let's talk about category pages versus cornerstone content pages. And I would say that, well, let me show you the example first. So we'll go to Copyblogger. Okay. So this right here is a cornerstone content page. All right. And two screenshots, but it's the same page. If you want to view this in your browser, you can go to copyblogger.com and go to landing pages. But this is a cornerstone content page. All right, so it is, set up as a landing page. You don't see on here, a rundown of blog articles. It is a landing page that is explaining our big picture philosophy on landing pages, and then has a very, very specific call to action of registering for mycopyblogger.com. This page is, when we're doing internal linking on the term landing pages, we're linking here. If there's external links that people are building to, for information about landing pages to Copyblogger, we hope that they're going here because this is the page, if you search landing pages in search engines, that will surface the most. So this is a cornerstone content page optimized as specifically as it can be for that term landing page, from an SEO perspective and optimized from a conversion perspective to capture people who are interested in landing pages. A category page then, this is just an example of a category page from Copyblogger, which is adaptive content. Now, I believe if you go to category landing pages, you will see a similar type page. Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, which is just a rundown of articles, but that's a category page, not cornerstone content. So adaptive content is a topic that we have talked about some on CopyBlogger, but it's not necessarily one of our cornerstones. So it is kind of a subcategory beneath a cornerstone content page. But, you know, still, some people want to see all the articles that we've done on adaptive content, and so we have a category page for it. Now, we could do more with this real estate up here. We could, you know, have the title of the page be adaptive content and give a quick little description of the articles that you're going to find here, but this is basically just what the default category page looks like.
Yeah, and in fact, we should do that because it'll boost our search engine optimization.
And we may on other pages. Adaptive content is a relatively recent addition to our list of categories, so that may be why. But let me show you an example where it's kind of the same. So like at Assembly Call, we do news roundups, and that's kind of one of our cornerstones is we do a weekly news roundup. But if you go here, this is also the category page. So I, you know, went in, edited the category page, so I've got the title, I've got a little subheading under it, a description. I also link people to our free membership, and then the rundown comes after that. So it's kind of a combination. So cornerstone content and category pages can be similar, but the example from CopyBlogger shows you how they can be a little bit different. But the big idea is that, you know, your cornerstone content, your cornerstone ideas, you're not going to have a ton of those. You know, you might have, you know, 4, 5, 10 of those maybe maximum, you know, but topics that you are really, really good at, you know, that kind of encompass everything that you talk about. And your different categories, they're going to go underneath those, and you might be able to group your categories beneath your cornerstone topics. And that can obviously grow, you know, as your site grows, and I think in that case you'd be more likely to have, you know, categories within cornerstone. And maybe at the beginning you would start out with categories and cornerstone topics that are more similar before your content evolves some. But that's the basic distinction between them and how you would set them up in Rainmaker. Is there anything else that's important to add there, Chris?
Yeah, the main thing where you've got a category, where you've got an archive, it's reverse chronological. It's not put in a narrative order, right? Whereas when you're writing a landing page, when you're writing a content landing page, you're putting together a beginning, middle, and end. You're actually curating the order that it comes in as well as the content that's included. And with the catch-all category, it might not be your most compelling work, whereas when you're actually crafting a page, what you're doing is saying, okay, this is what this person really needs to see, this is the best stuff, this is the most important stuff. So just think in terms of automated versus handwritten, that's a big difference as well. If you were going to do a page about landing pages, you would actually keep some things out, right? You wouldn't include everything. You wouldn't include your oldest material. You would want your most up-to-date material, or you'd go back and edit it. So the archive page can have a good introduction. You could even say subscribe just to this category if you wanted to, you know? But yeah. The landing page is more handcrafted, it's more copywritten.
Yep. Okay, the next question comes from Kelly. Oops, look at that. I only have one slide and it's got the answer on it. So here we go. We're giving away the answer while we read the question. So why does a customer have to create a username and password to buy a product? Her site isn't live yet. She's still on WordPress.com, but she has friends say they didn't follow the email because they didn't want to create a username and password just to receive her blog by email. Why add another resistance factor? So it's a really interesting question, Kelly. And the distinction here is that your visitors will need to create a username and password to become a member of your site. So if you want to give them a product, if you want to create some sort of membership area on your site, they will need to create that username and password. And you're right, it does create a few extra steps that, you know, on some level are probably going to cost you some conversions over someone just giving an email. That's, you know, kind of conversion 101. We know for every additional step, you're probably going to lose a person or two. But the idea is that you're gaining more of a benefit by getting that person as a member, and they're encouraged to take the extra few steps because you've sold them on the benefits of membership. So that's important to remember. But it's also important to remember that you do not need to require a username and password for someone to become a subscriber. So just for email, you do not need someone to do username and password. Subscriber opt-in can be by email only. And let me show you a quick example of how, and I've started to use this setup on a lot of my sites. And so we're actually doing it over on digitalcommerce.com right now. So if you go to register for the free membership, right, here are all the benefits of membership. And then to register, you got to put in your first name, email address, password, right? That looks a little bit more intimidating than just a single field for putting in your email. And it creates a membership, and there's a free membership experience that goes along with it. So hopefully people understand that and they'll join the free membership. But if they don't, you can offer then basically a step down and say, okay, you know, if you don't want the full membership, that's fine, I understand that. How about just subscribe to the newsletter? And so there's a lot of different ways to do that. You know, I could put this side by side with another little, say, content area right here that basically gives people both choices right next to each other. In fact, our landing pages make that really easy to set up. What I like doing and what I did on this page is actually I have a pop-up that triggers on the page that says, hey, want just the newsletter? And then it's just got this single field with the email, sign up now. It puts them onto that specific list. So they're not a member. They can't log in, and so they can't, you know, get to a free member library or anything like that, but they can join the email. And then maybe you use your autoresponder to sell them again on the benefits of membership, or, you know, that's just part of what you're including in your email messages. But that way you've kind of given people both options. But I want to clear up any misconception. You don't need to require a username and a password to get someone onto a list. That's only for membership, not to get someone onto an email subscription list. Yep. Okay, next up we have Heinrich's question. So Heinrich asks, how best to go about choosing topics for a blog? That is a big question. Number two is, how does one monetize a blog or other content on the Rainmaker platform? So I've got a list of 7 ways to do that. Chris, is there a quick way that we can summarize question number one? Because that could take an entire session to answer fully.
It probably would make a really good session, actually, because it's a few years since we've actually covered it. The main way to choose a topic for a blog starts with your criteria of, are you wanting to make money from the blog because of the blog? Is it to market a business? Is it for fun? So why blog, first of all? And if it's to become a business or to market a business, that's going to be something different than just out of enjoyment. So our own blogs, Maker Hacks and Assembly Call, and I guess your Primility.
Primility, yeah.
Yeah, that's probably more for fun than anything, right? It's a passion project rather than...
Well, it's interesting. Assembly Call started out that way, but it has become more of a business as it's generated revenue, and I'll get into some of those methods. But I definitely chose it because I had a passion for it, and I knew that there was an audience that needed a specific niche that we could fill with content different than what was already out there. And I think that's an important consideration when you're choosing is, you know, okay, what are you passionate about? What do you, and it's not just passionate, but what do you really feel like, you know, you have some knowledge in, some experience in, and you're enthusiastic to create content for, but then you also want to match that to an audience need. You know, so is there an audience out there for it? And can you position yourself in a way different from the other people that are out there so that you can actually get noticed? And when you do that, and if you create good content over time, you know, you can develop then strategies for monetizing, but it can evolve from a passion project into a business, although if you know it's going to be a business, you're certainly better off making those types of decisions earlier on to set yourself up for success if you know that that's the direction it's going in.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You've got to be able to differentiate. You've got to serve a need. So I've just shared a tweet which Darren actually made from something I said, which is kind of narcissistic, but, and for some reason he shares it with only one T in Garrett. But you've got to find the sweet spot, the overlap between what you know and what people want. If you don't serve a need, then you're not going to get any readers, let alone any monetization. So you have to lead people to what you want to sell via what they want and what you can authentically serve. And so it's not enough just to be passionate. It's not enough just to find a need. You do need something that you can keep writing about long term that serves a need, and preferably is a topic that people are willing to spend money in. So yeah. An example Sonia always uses is naked mole rat farming. you could be as passionate as anything about it. People could be searching Google all day long, but if nobody's willing to pay money in that niche, then you could be working for nothing. So it would be just a hobby.
Yep. It's an excellent distinction. So let's go through, how does one monetize a blog or other content on the Rainmaker platform? Well, there are a lot of ways. And as
Can
we mentioned,
paste this before we get into the actual list?
Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So I always say that there are two types of blog. There's a media blog and then there's a business blog. And a media blog is content that is monetized, right? So think about a lot of the clickbait sites. And then you have a business blog, which is you have a product or service and you market it through blogging. And the two very different ways of looking at the entire strategy. In between that is affiliates. So I just wanted to preface that the broad categories and the mixtures, but really you're choosing a direction and then running with it.
Yep. No, absolutely. And so then within that, you know, in terms of ways to monetize, so with Rainmaker, you can certainly sell digital products. So you can sell an ebook, you can sell a course, you can sell access to a content library. That is one great way to monetize with Rainmaker. Another way is to sell a paid membership. So, you know, people have access to your site, maybe there's a forum in there, you know, you do regular Q&As, whatever it is, but you sell a paid membership. You can also sell one-on-one coaching, and we've seen some people be very successful with this model using Rainmaker. And then you can also sell offline services. You know, so you use a blog to, say, provide expert tips on lawn care, but then, you know, on all of your blog posts, you have a call to action for people to call you if they want to hire someone to do their lawn care. And that starts to get into what Chris was talking about. You know, and certainly, you know, with all of these different options, you're using your blog to build authority, to drive traffic, to build an audience. And then, you know, there are all these different ways here then that you can monetize it once you've done that. We showed you earlier, you know, affiliate links. You can sell products as an affiliate. That's another way to monetize. You can also sell sponsorships on your content. You know, so for example, the company SeatGeek sponsors our podcast at the Assembly Call. That didn't happen right at the beginning. That's something that happened after we had built an audience, but that is now an additional way that we drive revenue. And then you can also accept donations. So, you know, that's another way. If you've built an audience and maybe you don't really have, you know, a product to sell yet, but people just absolutely love your content and the time that you're putting into it, you can open yourself up to donations as well. And we actually did a session inside of Digital Commerce Academy where we went over how you would actually do that and how to set it up properly with Rainmaker. So a lot, many, many, many different options that you can use, and it's all going to depend on, you know, your business, your content, your context, as, you know, obviously you're seeing a lot of these answers depend on that.
Yeah. So I want to just give some more detail for why I'm pretty much against selling ads. And it's funny because back when Darren asked me to co-author his book with him, it was because at the time he made most of his money with ads and a lot of money with affiliates, but he didn't sell any products, whereas I just sold products and services because I could never make money with ads. And I was actually CTO of an ad network for a very short time. I still personally couldn't make money with ads. Mm-hmm. And I've got some metrics to share. These are metrics from my own experience. My ad click-through rate is 0.67%. So 0.67% of the people who view my content would click on ads. So if you get paid per click, that's really lousy, right? Whereas my affiliate links have a click-through rate of, get this, 35.37%.
Wow.
So you make more money from affiliates anyway, but secondly, more people click them. So how about that? So I don't think it's a viable way of making money now, advertising. Even if you're BuzzFeed or, you know, any of those really big high-traffic sites, it's a race to the bottom. The content's going downhill, the advertising rates are going down, and there's more people competing for the same ads. They're less effective, so people aren't buying the ads. I just think you're better off having your own products and affiliate, and you'll make more money with a lower audience. A smaller audience, you're actually serving the audience instead of getting paid for them to go away. You know, I used to, when I dabbled in ads, an ad block, a little square ad block was $250, and they only had six. Even when I sold them out, it still wasn't making as much as selling my own products and services. So why would I use that real estate for ads when I could sell my own stuff?
I agree with you 100%. And that's actually, we could make kind of some marginal revenue on the assembly call, for example, by putting display ads on there, but I don't do it. I think there's a bit of a distinction between an actual sponsorship for your content. And I really look at a sponsorship as more of a partnership, with one person where you're integrating some different messages into your podcast. We actually sell packages with our email list. And so I think that works a lot better than just putting display ads on, which, I used to do when we blogged at Midwest Sports Fans. And yeah, you see less and fewer results from from having those ads on there.
And
So
more and more people are using Adblock, so that's another
yeah,
option.
exactly. So no, that's great. We could probably spend an entire we should do a podcast episode talking about that, because
Yeah, we should.
it's a good topic. All right, number 13 to Arthur. As a multimedia artist, I'd like to use graphics and videos in my content marketing strategy in addition to articles. My goal is to attract an audience and build an email list of people who like my visual content. What strategies can I use, and what Rainmaker features are available for working with graphical and video content? So, Chris, what insight would you give Arthur here on using Rainmaker for graphical and video content?
Well, for graphical content, you've got the media library, and you can do galleries, right? So those are really nice features. And for video content and audio content, just remember that there is a soft limit on disk space on your site. So we're not restricting you, but when you get to 5 gigabytes, I believe it is, you'll get a message saying you need to contact support and have it expanded. And that's just for resource allocation and resource planning. We're not saying you can't have more than that, that's a soft limit. But you don't really want to have massive video downloads anyway. Really, you want to optimize the size and have it optimized for streaming, because you don't want to use up other people's bandwidth, especially if they're on mobile, which in Canada it's very expensive and you'd get very little data, and a lot of countries are like that. Amelia actually did an article about optimizing your videos, which I will share here. And we
Great.
have a knowledge base article which Amelia also shared with me that I have to hunt down, and that's about how to use video and media in Rainmaker. So this is how to upload via FTP. So if you've got really big media files, you're going to want to use FTP rather than the browser-based upload, and that's how you do it. You add that to your domain name to find the knowledge base article, or you can search for FTP.
Very good. Moving on to John's question. So John says, I have never had any blog published before. Please advise what platform to use for my blog and how to set it up. So this is a good question. It's a bit of a general question, but we can tackle this one, Chris. And really, there's one answer that comes to mind first, and that would be the Rainmaker platform. Considering that this is a Q&A for the Rainmaker site building roadmap, obviously, Rainmaker is a great option. If you are thinking at all about, expanding into digital products, creating a course, having a membership site, hosting a forum, hosting a podcast, any of
Especially
those
a podcast
items,
network.
especially a podcast network, then Rainmaker is going to be a great choice. But, Chris, I think you and I both agree on this. If someone is just starting out, and they're just going to be doing a blog, and maybe they don't have any vision beyond that, they don't know where it's going to go, it's perfectly fair to say that Rainmaker might be a little bit too much for that person, that they may not need everything that Rainmaker provides.
Well, one of the things that Rainmaker provides is you can have everything set up very quickly, and it's very powerful. But if you're very much a DIY person, you want to do it all yourself, you're technically minded, you don't mind sourcing different plugins and getting them to work together. If you're quite happy getting the design working how you want it without the tools that are in Rainmaker platform, then you can save some money with our other option, because Rainmaker is more for, it's for people who are going to make money. It's not for a personal journal website or a diary writing about what you ate, or it's not for writing about your kid's football team. So I've got a personal blog which is not on Rainmaker, just because it's really an archive of my photographs, and it goes back to, 1999 or something, 1998. It's just I've had like a personal site for so long, but I don't need all the tools and features and, all the analytics and everything that comes with the Rainmaker platform.
Yeah. And that other option would be that you mentioned is StudioPress sites. So if you go to studiopress.com, you can get the information on StudioPress sites, and it is, obviously not as expensive as Rainmaker on a monthly basis or on an annual basis, and you don't get as much in there. But you can see what StudioPress sites offers, and it may be something that is more appropriate to your current goals than what Rainmaker is. So, both are excellent options, and it just depends on what you need in a platform. So both of those options, John, we would recommend, obviously, because we built them and we believe in them.
I will tell you the difference, and we've been asked a couple of people and to everybody on this webinar, Rainmaker owners. Some people are prospective Rainmaker owners that are listening right now, and it's open to the public. And we do get asked a lot what the difference is between StudioPress sites and Rainmaker. StudioPress sites doesn't have all the features of Rainmaker. It does have our maintenance, so you don't have to worry about if your site's going to be up and if it's going to be up and running, but you don't have all the features that we've talked about today in this webinar. It's WordPress. It's got a whole bunch of themes included. You don't have the customization options that you have in Rainmaker. You don't have, like, if you choose a theme in Rainmaker, you can have it look like the demo. You can press a button and it'll make it look like the demo. You have to do that work yourself with StudioPress sites. So it's still a decision you have to make based on your time, your abilities, and your budget. But that's why we have both options. They're both good, and support will be quite happy to talk it through with you as well.
Exactly. Okay, so I do want to make a quick note here of some upcoming sessions. So coming next week, March 23rd, how to use Rainmaker to turn blog traffic into subscribers. So we've talked about, blogging, getting your blog set up. Now let's convert people who get to your blog, who read your content. We're going to talk about some ways that we do that and how you can use Rainmaker to do it. And then, of course, we will have a Q&A to follow that up as we round out the month of March. And then we'll be talking about SEO and other traffic and attraction building strategies in the month to follow.
You might be wondering why we're talking about turning traffic into subscribers and then talking about traffic afterwards. Does that seem strange? The
That's
reason
true.
is you don't want to waste any of your traffic. The first thing you want to do is at least have the minimal subscription incentives on your site. So when you do start getting traffic, everybody that visits has an option and an opportunity and an incentive to sign up. So make your site magnetic first and then start attracting people to it.
Yes. We have a quick question in here from Ronald. Can a Rainmaker site have more than one blog? This is an interesting question. I mean, technically, there's only one blog on there, but based on how you set it up and how you made it look, I mean, you can make individual category pages look like their own separate blogs, but they would all have to have the same category. So you might not necessarily deem that as a blog, but you can kind of make it look like there are very distinct separate parts of your site. So I suppose the true answer to that question would depend on exactly what you're trying to achieve with a second blog, but you can certainly set up very distinct content areas on your site if that's the goal.
And support could help you with that as well. There's some tricks you can do to make that even more effective, but you would use the probably the category description to really drive home that it's a different blog. Each category has its own feed, so you could actually have people subscribe to that quote unquote blog as well. And categories can have subcategories, so your category slash blog can have its own categories. So you can get quite fancy with it, but they would have the same domain name. You can't have two domain names work in the URL of, you would have to have a separate Rainmaker site if you wanted to do that. It's not multi-site.
Yep. All righty. Well, thank you all very much for being here, Chris. Thank you for joining us and lending your insight, as always. We
Always a
appreciate it.
pleasure.
And we will talk to you next week. We'll be back with another edition of the Rainmaker Site Building Roadmap. Take care, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.